Hello and welcome to the TPM podcast with your host, Mario Girard. Today's topic, we're going to talk about why the TPM role has gained prominence. This is both for newbies and TPM veterans alike. I'm really excited about this one because it's one of those things that I'm really passionate about. We'll go into talking about quantifying the number of TPM opportunities in the current market, the salary potential for TPMs, the three fundamental areas of expertise for TPMs, and how your journey into agile and project management needs to be if you're a new budding TPM. We'll also go a little bit and touch on the technical aspects of a TPM and what the TPM needs to know about. And then we'll finally go into the consistency of a development team and where the TPM actually fits in. So let's get started, shall we? So why is the TPM field so attractive? If you take a look at Amazon, Google, Facebook, LinkedIn, Uber, or any one of the tech companies, they begin to realize the value of a TPM and why it's so necessary to have this role. Sometimes I feel developers don't understand what TPMs are actually doing, but I think over time that'll get fixed. So just to give you a perspective, right now, Seattle has over 400 TPM openings, and I have the link in the transcript. California, for example, has around 500 TPM openings. Amazon as a company has 200 TPM openings, and Google has around 100 TPM openings. In 2016, there was a survey done which says that Seattle approximately has around 100,000 developers in 2016. And my research shows that nearly 4,000 plus TPMs are at least there in Seattle. So there needs to be another 4,000 TPMs that are going to get into the market over the next 4 years or so. And I'm calculating this because there's a 1:8 ratio of one TPM is to eight developers. So it's always good to understand the ratio of number of TPMs to developers. So this also makes it a little difficult because if there are eight developer jobs, you're going to see one TPM job. So the number of jobs are going to be fewer, but all the companies are moving towards a TPM-based model. So you'd see more and more TPMs in the market. And more need for TPMs in the market. And as you see the tech companies bringing in more TPMs, I feel all the other companies will eventually follow the trend set by the tech companies. You really didn't see this 4 to 5 years ago. As I mentioned in the previous podcast, I don't think that this is a fad. You're seeing a lot of new TPM meetups. The community itself is gearing up for a big boom. So I think it's really important to realize that there is a big need for TPMs. If you try to understand why there's an explosion of the number of TPMs and why there's a huge need for it, you first need to understand that the architecture we're building has changed over the last 20 years. We've gone from a very monolithic-based application to a more service-oriented architecture. And from a service-oriented architecture, we're right now evolving into a microservice architecture. What this means is that we're going to have smaller feature teams who own, build, and deploy, manage, and maintain that particular feature from end to end. So this brings to the forefront that each of these teams are interdependent on other feature teams to accomplish their own features. Did that sound kind of confusing? What I should do is give you an example, right? Let's take the example of requesting an Uber ride. You have one team which is finding out the user's location. Then that feature team which has your location is then passing on your location to another team, which is responsible for searching for drivers near your location. There's one team which is waiting for you to confirm the ride. Once a ride is confirmed, then there's another team which is pushing out messages to 5 or 6 drivers close to your location. One team is waiting for the driver to accept you as the next ride and then sends you a note on when the driver is going to reach you. So you can now see that each team has an imperative need to communicate with every other feature team. And this is where a TPM really, really helps the team. He is aiding in those communication links between all the other feature teams. In general, it's kind of, in my opinion, it's driven by the microservice architecture, but it's also another important factor is that it completely fits into the agile iterative development model. And you can see that there's a lot of focus on delivery and on moving at a tremendous speed, that a TPM is on the forefront of helping organizations kind of move and deliver at that speed. And that's where, you know, the TPMs are really, really coming into picture. So kind of moving back, if you think about, I gave you some numbers on how many TPMs are there in each market. But if you just Google TPM salary analysis 2017, you'd come across my blog. And what you're seeing right now is TPMs in general are making anywhere from $150,000 to all the way to $360,000. So you'd see an average TPM kind of make around $230,000, especially in the Seattle market and in the California market. Just to be clear that this is not like a base salary, but it's a total comp, right? So you see that companies are valuing TPMs enough to having them really, really paid well. And you see a vast majority of TPM roles are still, people are still trying to fill them. And this should give you the push to become a real, real TPM and take it to the next level. I hope that kind of piqued your interest with all the salary analysis, because TPMs are almost paid as much as developers right now. They're not there yet, but eventually I think TPMs are going to be more valued or almost equally valued than the top development talent within an organization. So, okay, let's start with who can become a TPM. You could be either a developer, you could be a software test engineer, a product manager, an IT project manager, a technical account manager, or pre-sales solution architect, whatever you are really, right? You can become a successful TPM. And the only thing that you need to pay close attention to is having the passion to driving yourself to make an impact in an organization. And, you can become a TPM. Just to give you a little background, right? I was in a sales role when I started my career. I was in sales for 3 years, and then I moved into QA, became an SDET, then I became a PM, and now I'm finally a TPM. I'll give you more details on that story late at a later podcast, but what I'm trying to tell you is that you can, whatever your role is, you can become a TPM, and it's really, really doable. Okay, let's move on to understanding what the fundamental 3 areas that a TPM role requires you to have, the expertise areas. One is a technical aspect. You need to understand technology really well. The second aspect is a project or a program management aspect. Third thing is you need to really be able to work with people and understand business really well. So what I normally tell people is that you need to be an expert in 2 of these 3 areas: the technical side, the project management, the people side, or the business, right? I kind of group people and business together. Maybe that's right, maybe that's wrong, but basically you need to be an expert in 2 of these areas to break into the TPM field. If you're already an SDET or a software developer or a software development manager and you're looking to be a TPM, one of the great starting points is to do your Scrum certification and your PMP certification. You know, talking about certifications, I've written a blog post in the past, and there's a lot of debate on how effective these certifications are and if you really need it. But in my opinion, getting a certification kind of gives you the foundation of what you need to know as a TPM. PMP is a good place to start because it's one of the most recognized certifications in the world for project management. It's kind of the gold standard in project management. PRINT certification if you're in Europe, but PMP is very valued in most parts of Asia and in the United States. If you're looking at job descriptions that explicitly ask for PMP, this would really help. And even if they don't explicitly ask for PMP, it kind of gives you the ammunition you need to go in for a TPM interview and say that, you know, you know the fundamentals of project management, right? The PMP normally takes 2 to 3 months to prep and to give an exam. The PMP does require candidates to have at least 3 years of project management experience. If you don't have the project management experience, you can take another exam, which basically tests you on all the PMP stuff, but gives you a certification called the CAPM, and it's CAPM. It's called the Certified Associate in Project Management. It's by the same body, the PMI, but it's just to differentiate between people who have the experience versus people who do not have that experience. Some of the other tips on the project management front is to get involved in your local PMI chapter. You can become a member at the PMI chapter, but if you don't want to become a member, you can just visit your local PMI chapter website. You'd see a lot of activity, in meetups as well. So just to give you a sense, the Seattle chapter, I think, currently has around 3,000 to 4,000 members. And every gathering brings anywhere from 200 to 300 project managers where they talk about, you know, risk management, leadership. And it's really good to stay plugged in. At the same time, it's very good to network and kind of meet other project managers in the field and understand what they're dealing with. And then you have the Scrum certification. The Scrum certification is given out by several organizations, but the one I like is the Scrum certification given by the Scrum Alliance. They certify you as a certified Scrum Master. It's basically a two-day training program, in person, done as a workshop where you're actually doing the fundamentals of Scrum and you're understanding how it works. This is good because it's something which you must have because most of the teams are agile and every team implements a flavor of agile. So getting some kind of, you know, a workshop done to understand how agile works is important. And then again, the Scrum certification, all of them actually involve a lot of self-study. So they prescribe, you know, books which you can buy on Amazon. And you pretty much read the books before you go for the workshop so that you have a good understanding of how different teams have implemented Scrum. It's also important to understand that Scrum is not a fix to deal with people issues. Agile Scrum only brings those issues to the forefront, and it's an opportunity to identify and fix them. But Scrum is not the answer for all the problems you might have. Anyway, moving on, we should talk about the technical aspects of the TPM. I'm going to touch a little bit on this. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but as a TPM, you need to understand the technical side of things. And there are three fundamental areas within the technical aspects that you need to understand as a TPM. One is you need to understand the fundamental building blocks of system architecture. You need to understand what those pieces are and how they kind of fit together. You need to understand how a load balancer works, how a virtual machine works, how containers work, What are the different types of databases? NoSQL versus relational databases. What would be the database schema if you're trying to design an architecture? Fundamentals of packet routing. You need to understand caching with Redis, maybe Memcache or Hazelcast, CDN, queues like Kafka, Kinesis. You need to understand all those fundamental building blocks. There's actually a very good article on my blog with all the pieces you need to learn and where you can learn them too. Most of them are open source. You don't need to pay any money for it. Then that's the fundamental things, right? The building blocks. And then you move into the architecture side of things. You need to understand scalability, durability, concurrence, redundancy, how partitions work, how do you handle failure? If you have millions of customers in various geographies, how your architecture looks like. I was just thinking this morning when I woke up, on the 26th or the 27th, I think, of this month, Apple's going to launch, you can start buying the iPhone X, right? And I was just wondering, there are probably around 300,000 people in the United States. Say 50% of them have iPhones. That's 150,000 people. Maybe 150 million people. And maybe half of them are going to want to have the iPhone X. And just imagine, you can start pre-ordering your phone at 12 on 26th, I believe. And there are going to be millions and millions of people who are going to try to book a phone on the 26th, on the night of the 26th, right? Just imagine how you'd build an architecture which can take that kind of load of, within a span of 3 to 10 minutes, there are going to be 50 million people trying to access that system. And on the evening of the 26th, there's probably going to be no people accessing it. So you probably just have one or two servers, not handling too much traffic. But when the floodgate opens, you're going to have a monumental, multifold increase in traffic. So you need, I'm giving you the example so that you need to understand how you design a system like that and what are the different pieces of architecture you'd use, how you'd build something that's scalable, which is going to go up, and what's the cost associated to it. And then you have the basic system design and architecture, which I was just talking to you about. So there are three points. One is the fundamental building blocks. Then you have scalability, durability, and those kind of things. And then you need to know how you put everything together, which is where system design and architecture come into place. So I think I'll go into a lot more depth in one of the next podcasts. But if you're really curious, as I said earlier, there's a pretty good blog post on, you know, understanding how this works. And you can use that to improve your technical chops. So coming back, if you take any of the big companies, right, like Uber, Dropbox, Expedia, you'll see that the product itself is divided into many small features. And each feature, as I said earlier, is the responsibility of an engineering feature team. We're now going to go into the makeup of what is the consistency of this engineering team. So it has, you know, to start with, it has a product owner, it has a TPM, it has an SDM, it might have some UX designers, some UI designers, you would have some performance test engineers maybe, you'd have a data scientist, you'd have a backend engineer. So you have all of these. So we are going to talk a little bit about what the consistency of a team looks like and where a TPM actually fits in. So the software development manager is responsible for hiring, firing, giving raises, bonus, approving vacations for the entire engineering team itself. The product manager is defining the vision of the feature you're working on. He's responsible for the core KPIs. His responsibility is to work with the TPM, who's responsible in executing on the vision he's putting forward. The product managers normally are working very closely with the customer success teams. They're understanding the fundamental pain points of the customer. They're also working with PR and marketing when a feature goes out. Remember that the product manager's fundamental responsibility is driving towards certain KPIs. When I talk about KPIs, I mean something like DAUs, WAUs, daily active user rate, increasing the revenue. They're working on a particular feature to make that particular feature better. The developers normally report into the dev manager. The TPM also reports to the dev manager, and the TPM is normally second in command for the dev manager. There are some organizations where the TPM kind of rolls into a TPM org. I have mixed feelings about TPMs reporting into a PMO type of an organization. I feel that if a TPM reports to a PMO-based organization, then the loyalties are different for a TPM, right? Anyway, coming back, you'd see the normal progression for a TPM is to be a TPM 1, TPM 2, then you become a senior TPM, a principal TPM, and a director. So some teams have embedded TPMs. Normally embedded TPMs, we spoke a lot about the various types of roles of a TPM in the last podcast, but an embedded TPM is fundamental having a singular focus area and driving an initiative with his dev team, which he's working on. He's collecting requirements from various teams. He's setting expectations of when features will be delivered. He's helping out with the architectural decisions across various teams. He's helping communicate those decisions back to the other teams, which depend on his API. He's explaining to teams why certain architectural decisions were made. He's constantly meeting up both with upstream teams and downstream teams as well. And embedded TPMs are constantly also working on the operational aspects of things, like monitoring the application which they are responsible for, the on-call rotation, having jump pages, customer support, working with customer support, working with the network operations teams, because they are responsible for the SLAs and doing CAPAs and those kind of things. And then you have cross-functional TPMs. These cross-functional TPMs are generally working across various teams to get an initiative done. You'd see these cross-functional TPMs normally who are trying to bring a large project which touch a variety of teams together. Let's take an example. Supposing you have a login feature or payment feature, those are embedded TPMs. They're responsible for that particular feature itself. The cross-functional TPM, supposing you have an entire website redesign, which pretty much touches every single aspect, then you're going to have a cross-team TPM or a cross-functional TPM who's working across every single feature team to make sure that those APIs and those features are redesigned to meet the new design format, right? Sometimes they're part of a PMO, even in launching a new product, which might involve 10 or 20 different teams. And this could be a functional, this could be a technical team, or this could be a non-technical team as well. Anyway, that's about it, folks. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. We spoke about the number of TPM opportunities in the field right now, the potential salary ranges, the areas of expertise that a TPM needs to have. We spoke a little bit of PMI networking within the PMI. We spoke about the basic consistency of a TPM, cross-functional TPMs, and embedded TPMs. I hope you really enjoyed this podcast, and I hope to see you all in a couple of weeks from now. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Bye-bye.